This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have Iowa caucus talk. Megyn Kelly, Sean Spicer, James Lindsay's going to join us and talk about communism. My goodness, there's so much to do. I don't know how we're going to do it all on I'm Right. Last night was the Iowa caucus. Maybe you heard. It was the first GOP primary state. And look, I'm going to go to Megyn Kelly here in a minute, and we're going to go to Sean Spicer. We're going to have all kinds of Iowa caucus talk tonight. I just want to say this. Remember, there's only one winner. I've lost two congressional races. I won two primaries and then lost both general elections. And so I know the elation of victory night. And I know the agony of defeat. I salute the winners. I sympathize with the losers, even the ones I don't like, the ones who it didn't work out for. But Donald Trump blew everyone out, and they were going all in Iowa. I know it hurts. Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. I shouldn't say I know it hurts. It hurts for about half of you. He got half the vote. Half the people love Trump. Half the people want something else. Trump fans are thrilled today. Trump haters are in agony today, and there's no way I can make any of that any better for anybody. There's only one winner. I salute the people who got involved. And let's be honest, it's over now. It is. Trump's going to be the nominee. We march forward. You do with that what you will. I wonder what Megyn Kelly has to say about that. I wonder if Megyn Kelly is going to even agree with me that it's over. I suppose she will, but let's find out. But first, let's hear what the candidates had to say. Nikki Haley's part in this little snippet absolutely murdered me.
This is the first because the big night is going to be in November when we take back our country.
The media was against us. They were writing our obituary months ago. They even called the election before people even got a chance to vote.
I can safely say, tonight, Iowa made this Republican primary a two-person race.
And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulated him on his victory. And now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
Pretty telling responses, but you never know. It is the night there was one winner, and a whole bunch of losers. Somebody who's very much not a loser, who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, Megyn Kelly, joining me now, the great journalist, host of the Megyn Kelly Show, which I love. You can watch it, listen to it, SiriusXM Triumph Channel 111. It's also on YouTube, youtube.com/Megyn Kelly. Okay, Megyn, Vivek drops out. Nikki Haley somehow calls it a two-person race after finishing third. DeSantis is mad at the media, and Trump's talking about November. What's the Megyn Kelly take?
All of that is irrelevant other than Trump. It's over. Yeah. I'm sorry. With all due respect, yes, there's like the, you know, slim little chance somebody could pull a rabbit out of a hat. But realistically, it's done. Trump crushed in Iowa. Trump, he's going to probably win New Hampshire. It's feasible that he could lose to Nikki Haley, where she has devoted all of her time and resources. But he's already crushing her in South Carolina, her home state, which comes right after that. And he's already not only crushing in the ballots that come on Super Tuesday in March, but But he's actually kind of rigged it legally, a lot of those elections, such that it's going to be almost impossible for somebody else to win just with the party rules. So Trump's in a great position going into March. These three states here are kind of interesting, but they're actually not. If somebody else wins, it's not going to stop Trump. I really kind of think I agree with those Republicans who are online right now saying, can we just focus the money and the resources behind Trump right now? Because we're going to need every dollar we have, because half our money is going to go to his legal defense fund. And Joe Biden is the best funded candidate in, you know, generations. So I'm not sure exactly why the Republican Party needs to keep playing this out, but I guess it's just that's the way the election ball rolls.
Megan, I had a talk last night. I have a bunch of Trump friends, bunch of DeSantis friends. I don't have any Nikki Haley friends anyway, but I have a bunch of friends in both camps. And one of my DeSantis-loving friends was despondent last night. We were texting back and forth, and he was crushed about this whole thing. Jesse, what did we do wrong? Do you think we did anything wrong? And I'll tell you, Megan, I'll put this out there, and I know you'll argue with me if I'm wrong because you don't care about that, and I love that. Is this something DeSantis could have ever won anyway? I told him, listen, you can't fight the ocean. You can't fight the tides. Donald Trump's already the former president, already popular. He's being indicted. The indictments essentially cinched it for him. If you had run the best campaign in history, and maybe you did, it wouldn't have mattered because you can't fight the ocean. Was I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. This is like, let's say they're, you know, having a contest to see who is going to get this $10 million house for free. We need, you know, a saucy blonde woman. And I'm like, I'm saucy and I'm blonde and I would love a $10 million house. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to put on my bathing suit. I'm going to get my hair did. I'm going to do my hair, my makeup, try to look my best. And I saunter out on the runway. I'm like, I'm getting myself a $10 million house. I'm in great shape right now. Boom. Out comes Elle McPherson with blonde highlights. I'm effed. It doesn't work that way. Life's not fair. It's just Trump is Elle McPherson. Ron DeSantis is extremely talented and extremely smart and would be an excellent leader, but he is not a walking ball of charisma. And Trump is, for all of his faults, he is. And so while the true Ron DeSantis would have been enough, would have been more than enough in any previous election cycle, to go up against Trump, you're going to need something close to another walking ball of charisma, not to mention the celebrity factor, which Trump had before he became president and has exponentially since becoming president. It just was an impossibly difficult task. It wasn't particularly well executed in DeSantis's case, but even had he executed it perfectly, I think we'd be looking at the same result right now.
Megan, let's talk Nikki Haley for a second. I have a few sources. You're an actual journalist, so you have a whole bunch more than I do, and I am hearing things that I don't love. You see, I'm going to vote for the GOP nominee, unless, of course, Nikki Haley is anywhere on that ticket. And I keep hearing things about Nikki Haley being on a Trump ticket. Explain that. Have you heard this? And why in the world would he do it?
Well, I understand why he'd do it, so I'll take that next. But here's what I heard. So Jason Miller, who works for Trump, I'm trying to pull up the text so I can just read it to you. Jason Miller apparently gave an interview to the New York Post. He works very closely with Trump. He was the guy we dealt with when I interviewed Trump. He's this sort of lead man on this stuff. And they were asked about who might be Trump's vice presidential pick. And the quote is, pretty safe to say it won't be Vivek, okay? Miller, reading from the Post, asked about the possibility of another GOP presidential contender, Nikki Haley, said he would let Trump speak about his decision. So he wasn't as explicit in shooting down that possibility as he was about Vivek. I'll make two arguments. People like Tucker have said not only would he not support that ticket, but he would actively campaign against it. Trump's got to be considering that because he follows Tucker. He's given him many interviews. He won't like that pushback. But Trump also wants to win and needs to win this election. A Republican must win the election, and it looks like Trump's going to be the nominee. So Trump must win this election. And so the vice presidential choice just got a lot more important. And if Nikki Haley can help him win, he might actually choose her because he's banking on people like you and Tucker eventually coming into the fold. When push comes to shove, you're not going to vote for Joe Biden. And you're probably not going to stay home when you realize Trump could go to prison if you do, and we're going to get another 4 years of Biden and Kamala. And we all know it's probably going to be Kamala because Biden probably can't make it 5 years. He could be banking on that. If he doesn't win, Jesse, he's going to prison. He can't pull back the DOJ off of that January 6th prosecution. Can't pull him back off of the Mar-a-Lago prosecution. He doesn't really need to worry so much about the state prosecution in New York. He's not going to jail for that one. The one down in Georgia is bad, but is having massive problems as Fannie Willis embarrasses herself, crosses ethical lines, and may now be getting criminally prosecuted herself. So he's got, if he can pull back those two federal ones, he's in good stead. And that means he needs to win. So you could see the argument that if she puts him in the best position to get those moderates and Dems who don't like him and never Trumpers who don't like him, maybe he has to just suck it up and go there.
Okay, Megan, so whip me here. Does she help him? I know she doesn't help him with me. It disgusts me, the thought of her being anywhere close to power in this country. She's openly hostile to the things that I value in life. But I'm one person. I'm not important. Does she help him win?
Yeah. I hear everything you just said fully. She does. I mean, just yesterday she couldn't say whether a man can become a woman. So she's disappointed a lot of us on our favorite issues. You know, whether it's she's too hawkish, she's too in bed with the billionaires, or she doesn't understand the difference between a man and a woman and whether you can stay and will and must stay one. However, the moderates like her. They like the GOP's big Achilles heel for the past couple of years since Roe was overturned has been abortion. And she's saying closer to the right things for on that issue for moderates, for liberals, for centrist people who are upset with the Democrats, who have had it with wokeism, Joe Biden's stance on Israel, whatever. They're playing footsie with the right now and considering coming over. I know a lot of these people in New York. They're Democrats, but they can't stand Joe Biden anymore. They can't stand the left. They're starting to watch Fox News and more alternative right-wing media. So they would consider, and Trump, you know, he's far less conservative, as you know, than Ron DeSantis. So even Trump is like, all right, I consider it, but he's kind of like out there and he says a lot of things I don't like. I'm not sure about, yeah. They look at her and they think, okay. Maybe we'd have a world after Trump where, like, a woman could be president and somebody who's more like I am with the moderation and blah, blah, blah. I know you don't like it. But if you can get those people voting, you know, Republican, I can see the calculation. Not advocating for it. I actually think it's going to be somebody else, but I can see it.
Is there a Megyn Kelly call on who you think this is going to be? Sorry to put you on the spot, but whatever.
I do have an idea. I don't have inside knowledge, but I do have an idea. I'm not going to say it yet, but it's a woman and she's young and she's in politics.
Okay. Oh, dang. All right. Now I'm curious. I bet everyone is. Well, I guess you better go watch the Megyn Kelly show, everybody, and listen to the Megyn Kelly show and find out whenever she reveals it. Megyn, you are the best. I appreciate you very much. All right. Noam? You think it's Kristi Noam? I wonder if it's Kristi Noam. Anyway, talk about this more. We have a lot more to talk about. Sean Spicer came on here, predicted how everything was going to go. We'll let Sean come on next, spike the football a little bit about being right, talk about what it means for the future. We have so much more to get to. Before we do that, let's do this. Let's understand something. It is cost-cutting time for all of us. You, me, everybody. The value of the dollar is going down. I don't need to tell you that. If you've bought groceries, you know that. Why don't you get out of your timeshare? Do you want out of your timeshare? Have you paid your annual fees? They've doubled, haven't they? The special assessments. Now you can't even get in the timeshare half the time. Oh, I hear all these complaints. Why don't you just get out? Oh, Jesse, I can't. I signed the contract. Call Lone Star Transfer. They've read your contracts. They know all about this. How successful are they at getting you out? Oh, I don't know. 99% of the time, they put it in writing. Legally and permanently, you will be free from your timeshare. Call them. They can't help you unless you call them. 844-310-2646. All right? We'll be back.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. That's There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
The big question Monday night is, did Trump win by more than 20 points? No one in the history of the caucuses has ever had 50%. No one. I believe that based on everything that I've seen, Trump is going to win by plus 20.
Dang. Sean Spicer. And that's why we have him right here on The First. Joining me now, host of the wonderful Sean Spicer Show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Monday through Friday right here on The First. Sean, my show is called I'm Right, but I'm thinking maybe you should steal that one. I'll just rebrand mine as something else, man.
I'm relieved. I think it might be I'm relieved with Sean Spicer, because I didn't, when I saw that playback, I was like, man, that was pretty bold. But he exceeded that expectation, Jesse. I mean, you think about it. Oh. The goal was to beat 41% and 12.8%, and he crushed it. And there's no question about it. Even CNN had to admit that he had a good night.
Sean, okay, can you explain from a 30,000-foot view level? Look, half the GOP primary voting base is despondent today. The other half are doing backflips. Talk to the despondent ones. Why is the GOP base so heavily in Trump's corner? I know you're not working for the campaign. Just give them the honest assessment. Why?
I think the easy answer, Jesse, is that in politics, we get promised a lot of things from folks when they run for election and then re-election. In Trump's case, he literally can point to a record of success both domestically and internationally and say, judge me by what I got done. And largely, domestically, you talk about a southern border that was secure. We were energy independent as a country. We had the lowest unemployment across all different sectors. The list goes on and on domestically. Then we look at internationally. It was the first time in several administrations that Vladimir Putin hadn't invaded or annexed any land. Israel was at peace. North Korea wasn't going nuts. Iran wasn't firing missiles at our ships and other commercial entities in the Mediterranean. China wasn't openly talking about taking over Taiwan, and there wasn't a skirmish in Eastern Europe that I mentioned that was bleeding us financially. So I think that's when I talk to people, they just tell me, look, I may not like everything about him, but he got things done. He did what he said he was going to do, and there's a record of result.
Can you explain, if people vote on, well, to push back on that, though, if people vote on records and results, why is Ron DeSantis at, what, 14%? I mean, clearly they're voting on more than that. If you're only voting on records and results, Ron DeSantis has records too. Trump has a great record. DeSantis has a great record. It's clearly they're voting on something else.
Well, I think in the case of DeSantis, I actually think he's been a great governor. He has done a lot. He has accomplished a lot. He has kept his word. Yeah. But when it comes to the country, and I think that a lot of people would have supported Ron DeSantis as the next guy. But at the end of the day, you don't change horses with a guy that's saying, I want to be that guy. If that guy's still around, you don't take the understudy when the main character's still there. You know, it was quoted to me, and this, so this isn't mine, but you don't go see the cover band when the actual band is still playing. So right now, I think people feel like Trump knows the system. He knows what he's doing. He fights back. I think Ron DeSantis, had he waited, maybe, and I get politics doesn't work like this, but at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of people who would have said you would have been the perfect person to take on the mantle of America First if you had waited your turn. I get why he didn't do that. I'm not suggesting that he did, but I think for a lot of people, they felt like he would have been perfect based on his record in Florida. Now, remember, just so people understand, I think Ron DeSantis looked at that and said, you got to go when you got to go. I'll be 2 years out of being governor when Trump leaves office, and who knows what the world will look like. So I get why he did what he did. That being said, as I said, I think a lot of voters are saying, yes, I like the record in Florida, but when it comes to running the country and in doing big things, energy independence, you know, securing the border, lowering taxes, Trump actually did it as president.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment, on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Sean, can you explain why? Okay, so Vivek dropped out right away. Nobody's surprised about any of that. He was always kind of like a Trump stalking horse anyway. But Nikki Haley didn't. Ron DeSantis didn't. Now, anybody looking at this race objectively knows that this thing is over. It is over with a capital O. I know that's hard for a lot of people to hear, but it is. Nikki Haley knows that too. Ron DeSantis knows that too. Why are they still in? What's the angle? Explain it for people who aren't political animals.
Well, I think there's two reasons. Well, three. One, in their hearts of hearts, you don't get in. You don't run for class president, never mind president of the United States, if you don't think that you can win and that you don't believe in yourself. So ultimately, they do believe in themselves, and they do believe that they are the best person to do this. Right or wrong, that's just, you don't put this much time and effort into a venture, be away from your family, et cetera, if you don't think you can do it. So that's number one. Number two, I believe that ultimately they think that there's going to be something that happens. Something's going to happen to Trump. Now, if you look at the legal cases, nothing is going to get decided in the next 20 days, next 30 days, next 60 days. And, you know, the process is such, I was literally sitting here doing math on a calendar. There's 15 states and one territory coming up on March 5th. That's Super Tuesday, 874 delegates. You need 1,215 to win. Nothing's going to happen before then. But to get to your point, what do they think? They think something's going to happen, and they'll be the ones standing there ready to assume the mantle if Trump were to falter or fall. Again, I don't see it happening, but that's kind of going through their mind. And then the third thing is that there's a lot of donors that are giving them money and saying, we'll keep funding you if you go. And the people that you surround yourself in politics are consultants. And the consultants only make money if you stay in the race. And so some of them are, you know, sitting back saying, God, if you get out of this race, I can stop. I don't get a cut anymore of everything that we spend on you. So I'm going to encourage you to stay in the race. And that's basically why.
Okay, it's easy to understand a politician's angle, hoping Trump falls in some way, or at least assuming if he does, you'll be there. It's easy to understand a consultant's angle. I'm a capitalist after all. Everyone has bills to pay. But you mentioned the donors. If you're a donor, you know, you're Johnny Moneybags today, why are you still shoveling money at Nikki Haley? Honestly, and I like the guy. I still plan on voting for him in the primary if he's there, but why are you shoveling money at Ron DeSantis? Isn't that throwing money away?
Yeah, it is. I think so. And it's not just the donors, right? It's also the activists, the people that are you're asking to make phone calls for you, to put signs out. I mean, those all those people in Iowa last night that were driving people to the polls in their four-wheel drive vehicles. And those are all volunteers. And they have to believe in you. And they have to believe that there's a path to the nomination. And I think it's not just donors. But for some of these people, it's a passion project. Either they really hate Trump or they really believe in DeSantis or Haley. And also, you know, the one thing that I have found is, to your point about being a capitalist, like, I am a New England frugal guy. Like, you know, if I can find something that's going to give me a coupon and I can save $5 and go do it. But when you're a billionaire and saying, hey, I'll throw a couple extra million at this campaign that I really like, you know, that's sort of like the tip when I go out to dinner. It's they don't really look at that as some huge amount of money. The people that are funding these people have serious cash.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I swear on my life I didn't plan this, Sean, but I nerd out on the details because details matter, and I'm very, very, very concerned about the GOP's cash situation going into this election. Donald Trump has to use half of his cash, whatever that number is, for his legal fees. Joe Biden, because he's a communist and backed by communists, will have unending amounts of money. If we're going to be outspent 2-1, Sean, how do we win?
Well, first of all, I would suggest to you that, I mean, if you go back historically and look at the last cycle, Trump raised, what, $154 million in the first quarter. As soon as we settle on a nominee, money's not going to be a problem. Everybody, money, look, you look at Iowa, tell me what Ron DeSantis did with, what, $80 million? I think the difference is that you're talking about a finite number of states, 8 states where this race is going to be run in. We're not going to have a problem with money. It's just a fact. You're going to have super PACs, outside groups, blah, 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 all the way down. Money is not going to be an issue in this campaign. Trust me when I say that. Trump's got a super PAC. They've got a lot of people around him. The RNC will do very well once we coalesce around a single candidate and they can form what they call a joint fundraising agreement. Right now, a lot of the donors, small donors and large donors as well, are holding back giving to the party because they want to see who the nominee is. Once that nominee is able to form that joint fundraising committee, historically, it raises plenty of money. I get your point. It's well taken. There's a lot of money that's going to lawyers that should be used on the ground and for other, you know, digital and data efforts. But it is what it is. And the nice thing, as I said, is that these are not unknown people, right? Donald Trump is well known. Joe Biden is well known. There's only so much you can do at this point. And as I said, I mean, you go back and look at Hillary Clinton on the Dem side. You look at Jeb Bush and now Ron DeSantis. Money can only take you so far. Trump wasn't the big spender in Iowa by any means. And I think so. Look, money helps. Especially early on for first-time candidates. Trump has an infrastructure together. He's got the data list. There's a lot of things that he has that by having run twice before, there's sort of an economy of scale there. I think your point is well taken. And it is ridiculous that he is having to bleed so much money on legal fees. But I don't think we're going to suffer from a lack of money.
All right. Well, let's cross our fingers on that one. Sean, you are the best, my man. I appreciate you very much. Let's talk to James Lindsay in some World Economic Forum talk next. Before we talk to James, you know how we're going to talk about World Economic Forum? You understand, it's so horrible. It's unbelievable that we live in a world where this is real. This should be some online conspiracy theory. As we speak, the men who run the world, they're meeting at the World Economic Forum to discuss how to destroy your money. They are. Digital currency, they love talking about that so they can track your every move, every bit of spending you do. Sorry, that gun purchase has been denied. So what do normal people do? How do you fight back against that? Billionaires and presidents and prime ministers. You get gold, man. Gold or silver, I don't care what color it is. Get it delivered to your home. You don't have to go crazy. This is for normal people. Oxford Gold Group will send gold or silver to your front door. Anonymous, insured. You don't need a bank vault. They're not gold bars. It's little coins that you can use if you need to one day. They'll also get it in your 401k, in your IRA. But they can't do any of this if you don't call the number. Don't wait until the value of your dollar completely disappears. You've already seen it go down 20%. You're gonna wait till that number gets to 50 before you call Oxford Gold Group? Then you can buy even less gold. 833-995-GOLD. Tell them I told you to call. They'll take care of you, I promise. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Is a fundamental pillar of our social, economic, and political lives. It is vital for cooperation, social cohesion, and effectively functioning institutions. To rebuild trust, there is a fundamental need to embody trusteeship, which means to care for the greater good. Let's use this annual meeting to rebuild trust by exercising our trusteeship individually and collectively for safeguarding the future of humanity and nature.
Well, that sounds like great news. Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, they want to rebuild trust. That's awesome. I'm sure James is excited about it too. Joining me now, my friend, the wonderful anti-communist James Lindsay, author of the book, The Marxification of Education, Race Marxism. You should read everything James Lindsay writes, to be frank. James, I'm excited. I've previously been against these people, and now I find out they want to earn my trust back. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I am truly and genuinely excited about this, because it means that they are starting to recognize that we don't trust them. They have lost our trust, and they can try all of their stunts to rebuild it. But trust is one of those funny things that once you, it takes a lot of work to gain it. And once you lose it, you don't just get it back. So these people saying, Klaus standing there saying that they're going to regain our trust collectively for the good of humanity and nature, does nothing but turn us off to him even more. So I'm actually pretty excited that they are getting the message that people are pissed off at them.
Okay, James, I've used this horribly lame example, but I'm uneducated, as you know, but it's something I've talked about many times before, thinking about the people and the elites as one big ball of Play-Doh, and the elites are kind of pulling away from it a little bit. They don't want to pull away, But they are. Every time they try to come down on us, they pull away and pull away and pull away, and they're losing our trust. And now they clearly see they want it back. What concerns me, James, is these people in the little ball are not exactly wonderful people who will be honest with us now to earn that trust back. What's the plan for the little ball to bring the big ball back into the fold? Because I promise it's not telling us the truth or letting us be free.
Well, it's going to be a lot of lying, and this is actually an important and positive turn that they're at this position, but it's also a dangerous turn. There will be immense amounts of lying. It's going to be mask back on for the most part. I hope we're going to have some nice revealing video, but the last couple of years, they've just been kind of laying it all out there and scaring the crap out of everybody. And so they're going to tuck back into the little turtle shell and say, no, we're just here for good things. We've made some mistakes. We're going to try to do better. That's how they're going to try to get back in the trust. You know, we came on too hard with ESG. We have to use a different approach. Of course, they know in their back pocket, they have the ace of natural asset companies, which could replace ESG completely. So they don't abandon the agenda. They just change the program and try to say that they're doing better when in fact they're doing worse. But the reason this is truly dangerous is because communism always works by deception, including deceiving people into trusting them, well, specifically deceiving people into trusting them, until the moment it can no longer do that, at which point they start to use force and crisis and calamity and destruction to create crises and emergencies that have to be responded to immediately and with their policies and their agendas.
Okay, we'll get back to the natural asset companies here in a moment, but that's just too good of a segue into Disease X. They're at the World Economic Forum right now talking about Disease X, 20 times more deadly than COVID. James, I just heard you say they want a crisis. They're at the World Economic Forum talking about Disease X. I don't want to be a deranged online conspiracy theorist. Please tell me these people wouldn't do something as terrible as that.
Well, I would love to tell you that, Jesse, but the question is, why wouldn't they? It worked so well 4 years ago. Disease election season is what it should really be called. And it worked so, so well 4 years ago. It allowed them to set up all their drop boxes and things. Of course, they're not really calculating what's going on the ground because conservatives are setting up drop boxes in churches and gun stores completely legally and might just beat them at their own game this time. But it was so successful to control the population, and the big weakness a lot of people said was, well, if COVID-19 was deadlier, we might have fallen for it. So I don't see what real impediment they have to stopping doing this, except the impediment that even if a natural disease X were to break out, we're all going to blame them for it. And it's not going to be a happy time for them because they're not going to regain our trust. And I hope they get the message.
James, you've been talking a lot about natural asset companies. In fact, you just brought it up again here. And this is a concept that goes way beyond most people's heads. When I say most people, I'm talking about me. What are these things? What do they want?
Well, they're actually companies that can be set up to be traded, publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. They were developed and funded in their creation by the Rockefellers, of course, so you know that they're a great idea. But basically, it's the idea that you can create a new kind of company called a natural asset company. And the natural asset company is there to manage natural assets. And so they are, by law, unable to make money. They're not allowed to do any unsustainable activity. But they use a new voodoo kind of economics called ecological accounting, to where they will determine, for example, if you know you go fishing and you pull a big fish out of the lake, you don't have to pay the lake for the fish. But if that lake is under the management of a natural asset company, they'll use this ecological accounting to decide how much the fish was worth to the lake to stay alive. And so then you would be able to extract value out of that. Think of it as the carbon credit scheme put on steroids to the tune of maybe $150 trillion a year worth of fabricated value. To take productive land and make it unproductive, productive waters and make it unproductive, and to put it under the management and control of whoever happens to own these natural asset companies with no penalty whatsoever if they decide to use it as a big squeeze and a land grab and then to violate their policies of no mining or energy extraction or whatever later, except to be delisted as a back to a normal kind of company. So you can see that it's a big scam to control people, control resources, and eventually to acquire all of those resources by making things like farming, mining, and so on too expensive for anybody to actually participate in.
James, stepping away from all the specifics here, I want to just ask you a couple things because I have a concern. I think it's a concern you probably share, but we as the American people, and we, I could use all the peoples of the West, but we as an American people, in my view, and you can disagree, I don't view us as being a people ready for freedom. I wish we were. I do not think we're ready for it. I wish we were. And I don't want a dictator, James. I don't want a dictator on the left. I don't want a dictator on the right. I, however, don't think we're made for freedom. So where do we end up here? There's going to be a pushback on the right, and it's not going to be a hardcore freedom movement as much as I would like that. I think that we're going to be left with crap and crappier, and I hate that. Am I wrong about the people? Are they ready for freedom?
They are, in my assessment, traveling around these 50 states an awful lot and talking to people all over this country. They are preparing for freedom. They are not currently ready. But it's not freedom that they're not ready for, Jesse. What they're not ready for is responsibility. And it is going to be a matter of remembering that we're individuals who do best, that the so-called invisible hand of the market is the magic, if you want. It's not magic. It's called emergence that occurs once you have lots of people close to the problems that they're solving, taking responsibility for those problems. When I see this pendulum swing, the big angry right coming back and is going to take over, and you said it's not just going to be crap, but crappier, the fascist return to fight off the communist provocation. What I see is more people who don't want to take responsibility. They want the government to solve their problems for them. But as long as it's their government, it's great. And we need to get back as a people to people who say, hey, you know what? Somebody needs to do that, and I'm somebody. In other words, I'm ready to take personal responsibility. That means people are going to want to go back to ownership. They're going to want to take responsibility for their lives and the direction of their lives. And it's time for us to start calling from the rooftops that it's time for us to start taking responsibility and stop looking for big government saviors.
How do we get the people ready for that? Because we're not. We are absolutely not. How do we make sure they're ready for that?
Well, it's a matter, actually, there are a lot of matters, that, but on a kind of, I don't want to say the word spiritual out of context, but in that kind of realm, it is going around and talking about the value of personal responsibility and the blessings of liberty in a kind of a conceptual, kind of very American spirit sort of way. But practically speaking, there are other matters involved. We have to encourage, we have to start pushing for policies that encourage ownership, that encourage, we have to fix, for example, right to fix for the farmers. We've got to start pulling back from entitlement programs and showing that they aren't helping people. In fact, they're causing damage. It's going to be a very difficult, very arduous process to get people ready for the kind of responsibility to take command back over their own lives, especially people in cities where things are more complicated with vertical integration and all of that. But it's going to start by screaming about the blessings of freedom and the value of responsibility, how much better your life gets and how much better your neighborhood gets and how much better your community and eventually your state and nation get when the people are taking responsibility for themselves, their lives, their children, and what comes in and out of their minds and bodies.
Let's hope they do it. James, appreciate you as always, my brother. All right. Look, I know there's a lot of domestic news, but the foreign affairs out there are getting spicy, dangerous. Lisa Daftari is going to join us next to talk about all this. Iran, Ukraine, China. Hang on.
I've already delivered the message to Iran. They know I'm not to do anything.
What's going on in Iran? Iraq, Ukraine, China, Taiwan, are all these things connected? You wake up one day, Iran is doing military drills with Russia, China, so on and so forth. Now everything's blowing up. We need Lisa in here joining me now, the wonderful Lisa Daftari, editor-in-chief of the Foreign Desk. Okay, Lisa, I wake up, I see Iran's dropping missiles in Iraq on us, and I can't help but think, man, it sure seems like everything's connected right now.
Oh, yes, absolutely everything is connected. The puppeteer being Iran's regime that has been emboldened by our administration. It's ironic to hear President Biden say that Iran has gotten the message. Well, the only message Iran got from President Biden is that they can do whatever they want. There will be no consequences, right? So for 3 years, the Biden administration went back to the table begging for a deal, even when it made no sense for us in terms of national security or Iran's weapons program. We watched Iran's protesters on the streets and didn't give them the support that they wanted for regime change. When the Biden administration removed sanctions from Iran's regime, enabling them to make revenue $60 billion on their own in selling oil to partners like China, to sell weapons to Russia, continue on with funding their proxies, are now firing and provoking the United States. So this only goes to show us how in the matter, it's more than 3 years, but how they have expedited their agenda in 3 years to put money towards all their proxies, whether it's Hezbollah in Lebanon, where you see and Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Gaza and the West Bank, them in Syria and Iraq, and the Houthis in Yemen. And of course, now we're seeing the consequences where the Biden administration is attempting to play whack-a-mole and try to deter them one strike at a time. Absolutely not working.
Lisa, okay, so you mentioned Iran. They're obviously controlling a lot of things when it comes to the Houthis and otherwise. Is there a Russia connection? Is there a Chinese connection? And how close are these countries? I know they've done military drills together, but that can be a lot of, that can mean a lot of things. Either that means we're besties or, hey, every now and then we'll fight together. What does it mean?
Well, that's the world we're living in right now. Nobody's really besties, meaning the word ally, the way we know it in traditional foreign policy, is not the case anymore. We have interest-aligned initiatives. And that's why you're seeing China worked very closely together with Iran in the endeavor of, you know, really sticking it to the United States. You see Russia coming to Iran to buy weapons. You see Russia going to North Korea to buy weapons. So there are countries that are these strange bedfellows working together because they have interests right now that are aligned. And then when it comes to other places, like competing for influence in the continent of Africa, for example, they will be competing against each other, both Iran's regime and China, and again, in other cases, working together. So we should absolutely be fearful that our enemies are emboldened to work with each other to evade the United States, whether it's in sanctions, whether it's on policy, whether it's finding new trade partners. And of course, if you've been following the BRICS convention, they are trying to even replace the US dollar. So completely working around the United States, trying to find, again, partners where they can to, again, empower themselves the way that they can. We're also looking, you know, at a time in history where the United States is not the world leader when it comes to so many things. So we have these countries working together just to evade the United States, work behind their back, replace the dollar, you know, in terms of replacing the economy, replacing, that supremacy that the United States had on the world stage. It is no longer. And you also have countries that absolutely want that position in leadership. If the United States doesn't want it, they see it as up for grabs. And of course, we're getting that sentiment from Iran's regime. And of course, China competing with us in every which way, whether it's in terms of military technology and, of course, calling the shots in the region.
Lisa, Zelensky, there are reports that he's asking for some sort of a peace conference in Switzerland. What are we supposed to make of this? Is it over for Ukraine? Is it what's going on here?
It seems like the money's dried out. I mean, how much more money can the West give him? And he's got to figure out some sort of end to this. Everyone wants to see an end to this, of course, but we just don't know what that end will be, what exit ramp we can take or have the ability to take. Of course, Russia calling the shots here. They have the upper hand militarily. There have been some gains made by Ukraine, but not enough to sustain them in this war. And if there's no more money coming in, then Zelensky is smart to move to now, you know, some sort of end to this entire war. It's raged on for more time than anybody would like. Billions and billions going towards something that inevitably we would have to come to this discussion, right? So here we are.
Golly. Lisa, thank you so much. You were the best.
Of course.
All right. We have Lighten the Mood next.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way. And we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, let's lighten the mood. And you know what I appreciate? You know what lightens my mood? When journalists do their due diligence. You shouldn't just report on a story. Track people down. Track people down with knowledge of it. Reach out to everyone you can for comment.
And since December, the chief says the department has enhanced its training in de-escalation, tactical communication, and crisis intervention. We tried to reach out to the man who died in this pursuit. They were unavailable for comment. Micah, back to you.
They reached out. What do you want him to do? The guy didn't say anything. That's his problem. I'll see you tomorrow.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.